Big show for you here today. It is free agency preview time. Ian Harditz of Fantasy Life joins me to break down every position available in free agency and play some matchmaker, send some players to teams, some ideal landing spots. Where is Malik Willis going? A heavy hitter running back market. Where are we sending those guys? Also, DJ Moore traded to the Buffalo Bills. We react live to that. All that and more coming on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me, it is the mayor of Fantasy Twitter himself. It is Fantasy Life's Ian Harditz. Ian, what's going on, buddy?
Great day to be great, man. Great to be on the award-winning Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. Congrats to you and everyone else involved. But yeah, we got already had a jam-packed show, man, and now even more to talk about. So let's get after it.
Ian is 100% right here. We have a ton to get into. This is going to serve as our official free agency preview show. What we're going to be doing is we're going to try to wish cast some top free agents to their ideal landing spots. We each have two, and I think we actually were completely different here. I don't think we overlapped a single time in our ideal landing spots. I tried to be realistic. I think Ian was pretty realistic with his as well. So we're going to go through pass catchers, quarterbacks, running backs. But first, as Ian mentioned, we had some breaking news prior to this show getting started here. Fantasy fallout time. DJ Moore traded to the Buffalo Bills. I will say, Ian, I think I talked about this 50 times or so, if I'm going to ballpark it, that this was going to happen, that DJ Moore was going to end up playing for the Buffalo Bills. I actually asked him about playing with Joe Brady back at the Super Bowl. We played that clip on the show following that interview. So this is something that, like I said, I expected it to happen. It has happened. The only thing I was maybe surprised by is that the Bears got a second round pick back in the package. I did not think that was going to be included here. But what was your reaction to DJ Moore leaving Chicago, opening up a lot of room for those exciting young pass catchers there, but heading to Buffalo to give them a player on the perimeter that they desperately needed?
Yeah, I feel like so much of the immediate pushback is, well, DJ Moore isn't a number one receiver at this stage of his career. And oh my gosh, look at this one route where he didn't exactly put the best effort in at the end of it. And that wasn't ideal. But like, realistically, is this not one of the best names we could have hoped for the Bills to get? Your Super Bowl window has been now for the last half decade. And what? We cannot go back into January with freaking Brandon Cooks and Josh Palmer and Keon Coleman being the main guys you're trying to get the ball to. Okay, so DJ Moore, AJ Brown probably would have been the one better option, but you know, I don't think Bills fans would have been thrilled about giving a round one pick and more to go ahead and get that as well. So never was going to be realistic for them to be in the bidding war for Alec Pierce. So I think all things considered, man, just in terms of winning now and trying to have the best roster in 2026, I'm a fan.
Yeah, I agree with you. And look, I think that production aside, I think DJ still has some gas left in the tank here. You mentioned, you know, you can definitely highlight some plays where he should have given more effort on this route or the other or whatever. And I've always said this about DJ. He's a good, like, he gets open, but he's kind of loosey-goosey with the details. He's not necessarily like, all right, this route's at 10 yards, I'm at 10 yards. But I actually, as I was writing up a piece about this, because I just filed that, I just tweeted out right before we went on air here, I referenced an old conversation I had with Josh Allen about Stephon Diggs, and he specifically said, yeah, I tell Diggs, I don't care. Like, if that route's supposed to be 7 yards and it's at 12, I don't care. Like, just go out there and get open and catch the football. I think that specifically is why I really like this move here, because yeah, DJ Moore, again, he's not going to be that right and tight guy on the details necessarily, but if he's just out there getting open, and I still think he can get open, that is not a fit with Ben Johnson, who is obviously a maniac about the details, but I think it can be a good fit with Josh Allen and a coordinator who knows DJ Moore well. So all things considered for DJ, this is probably the best spot that he could have landed in. And we have a history, as we're showing here on the screen right now, if you're watching with us on YouTube, we know what his usage is going to look like in a Joe Brady offense. A lot of perimeter stuff, X receiver, in breakers, especially like quick slants. I mean, Ian, you said it, Josh Palmer, Keon Coleman, like those dudes are not doing that on the outside. DJ Moore has a history of doing just that.
familiarity with Joe Brady is a great call. And also, we now get to play with Josh freaking Allen, okay? We had a 1,300-yard year with Justin Fields. Like, Justin Fields was the guy who, quote-unquote, unlocked DJ Moore after he had that run of quarterbacks in Carolina that was as bad as anyone other than maybe Terry McLaurin was dealing with. So, no, man, it's going to be an upgrade. And look, I think Caleb Williams is going to be a superstar. He's already incredible. Mm-hmm. His highs are what, you know, three or four of the quarterbacks in the league are capable of doing. The problem has been the easy stuff is hard, okay? That's why, you know, we have the inaccurate pass rates everyone throws around, the low completion percentage. So I would argue, too, like, Caleb isn't exactly the easiest quarterback to get on the same page of because so much of his game is improvisation in the first place. So, yeah, I hear you. DJ Moore needs to be running out his routes and everything like that. But we don't hear anyone talking about the, oh, look, there's DJ Moore wide open again, but Caleb's sailing the ball 5 feet over his head from the pocket. So it does go both ways to an extent here. And just, again, second round pick aside, the contract stuff aside, like, the Buffalo Bills are now a better football team, which is fantastic for them. And Matt, I know we appreciate it in the fantasy world. Now we got things condensed a bit in Chicago, which helps our jobs as well.
No question. And just real quick, like, before we get to the Chicago thing, the only thing I would say just in terms of like fantasy, like where DJ Moore should be drafted or what his projections are or anything, my suspicion is this is not the last move that we see the Bills make at wide receiver. I actually have one of the free agent receivers we're going to talk about going to the Buffalo Bills. I probably would retract that at this point. I don't know that they're going to hand out more money at the position, but I still wouldn't be surprised if they throw another draft pick at this thing. So again, I don't think they're done at wide receiver. That will definitely matter when we get to the conversation about where DJ Moore ranks. But let's talk about Chicago, what DJ Moore is leaving behind. My analysis, Ian, with these three young pass catchers in Chicago, Roma Dunze, Luther Burden, Colson Love, like, who do you want to draft in 2026? My answer to that has just been yes. Like, I want to take all those guys. Do you have a lean in terms of who benefits the most from DJ Moore walking out the door between those three guys?
Loveland's already consensus tight end 3. I don't see him going ahead of Bowers or McBride. Maybe just feel a little bit better about actually taking him as high as he is going in draft. So pretty much status quo there, which continues to be really good. I think it gives me more willingness to be extra high on Luther Burden. And hey, maybe we're not giving enough credit to Roma Dunze having the late season foot stuff, but just for my money's worth, Pat or Matt, I like just seeing the freaking burst, the twitch that Luther Burden has. Like, he moves different on the football field, man. We can talk about best yards per out run among a rookie wide receiver over the past decade, just third in the freaking NFL last year as it is. Like, the advanced stats are borderline erotic. I completely get it. But just watching the film and the way Luther can freaking move out there, man, it feels crazy to me that we have this situation where what he finished, you know, outside the top 50 wide receivers. He had the huge game in the fantasy championship, was cool, but he's going to be one of these guys where when you look at the ADP, like, versus where they finished last year, it's going to be a huge gap relative to a lot of guys. But we now got the incoming targets. We got year two in the system. We did see his playing time increase as it went on last year. I believe Caleb Williams will take another step forward. Luther Burden, man, I think right now he's probably already going to be around consensus wide receiver 18 with guys like Jameson Williams. And honestly, I'm buying him at that cost.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think both of these guys, Adunze and Burden, should easily be top 25 receivers. If you want to give a slight lean to Burden because he finished the year better, I think that's understandable. And again, this is funny. I think this has all been so transparent and obvious with how this was going to go with Luther Burden. I mean, when I saw them draft Burden in the second round last year, Ian, I was like, okay, what's going to happen here is they drafted him to replace DJ, push DJ Moore, and then eventually replace DJ Moore. And everybody on fantasy Twitter is like, why aren't you playing Luther Burden more? Why aren't you playing Luther Burden more? He's the slot. He should be the slot receiver here. To me, he's not a slot receiver, actually. He's not. He's not the Amon-Ra St. Brown role, which only exists because Amon-Ra St. Brown was awesome in Detroit. He's not that guy. He actually really is a good direct replacement for what DJ Moore was doing in the offense, but I just think he has a higher ceiling and can do more at this point in their respective careers if he continues to ascend. So yeah, I think the excitement for Luther Burden's 100% justified. I just think, like, Roma Dunze also shouldn't be forgotten here. Like, he was the number one receiver in the first part of the year, and, you know, talking to him after the season, like, that foot injury was pretty devastating, especially from like a not just how he played through it, but also just like practice and preparation and not kind of consistently being to do all the things. So yeah, I think there's reason to be excited about all these guys, but Luther Burden's the guy who definitely gets the playing time bump here, as we kind of all expected. So pretty cool first move on the wide receiver market. I think we'll see a lot of dominoes continue to fall. And with that, let's get into our actual scheduled conversation here, which is play a little matchmaker with these upcoming free agents. And let's stick on wide receiver alley here. And let's start off with the man of the hour here, Alec Pierce, potentially former Colts wide receiver. I mean, Ian, when someone says, hey, I've earned the right to test free agency to see what it's like, that usually means they're going to go to free agency and they're going to get a bag. So tell the people out there who you see Alec Pierce getting a bag from here in the next couple of weeks.
Full disclosure, Matt got his teams in first. Credit to the man, early bird, got the worm on that one. I also did like his call, let him reveal it, but I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans. I do think these are two teams at the top of in terms of just having all the availability in terms of salary cap space. Alec Pierce is, again, the top name. That's why we're talking about him first. So it might seem wild to see this guy getting, you know, the $20-25 million per year, but it seems like that's going to be the case in the Titans. And then, okay, we already got on the screen. The Raiders do fit the bill, again, as those two teams were. They have the need at wide receiver and they have the money to actually pay up for someone like Alec Pierce. Fernando Mendoza going the Raiders, Cam Ward with the Titans. Honestly, as bad as pretty much every single stat was for Cam Ward last season, you watch what the guy was doing. There'd be two or three throws per week that, again, blow your freaking mind. So would love seeing Alec Pierce go to Tennessee. Give them an actual lid lifter, an offense that didn't have one last year. I would prefer never have to spell Alec Ayo Manor ever again, Matt, if I really can get my way with that. So we add Alec Pierce this offense. It's going to make the job that much easier for everyone else. I will be curious because, you know, in fantasy, we're always saying, oh, you know, you earn your targets and all that. And I do think there's a level of truth to that. But when all of a sudden you're paying Alec Pierce, you know, $25 million per year, potentially, I would be very hard pressed to believe he's getting under 100 targets. So let's get, again, a field stretching, lid lifting wide receiver for Cam Ward and see what happens.
I think Pierce even alluded to that. Like, he's like, I want to be paid more so that they have to throw me the football more, in his interview with Kay Adams, the one that I was referencing earlier. So I think you're onto something there. Yeah, these are the two obvious spots here. My favorite was the Raiders, Ian, Tennessee Titans, because these two teams have the most money to spend. And like, that's what's going to happen here. This is what free agency is. I mean, it was like Kenny Golladay, and I hate to say that about Alec Pierce, a player I really, really like. I like Alec Pierce, but remember, Kenny Golladay hits the open market. They're both like kind of similar players. Big, physical, fast field stretchers. Obviously, Golladay had that weird hip injury or whatever, but he hit the open market and he became like a massively overpaid wide receiver. Pierce is probably going to get overpaid by one of these two teams for what he's shown to be so far, but that's the way free agency goes. That's why, again, I wanted to try to be realistic here, but I think the key, Ian, is that these two teams have the type of, well, one of them doesn't have him yet, but they will have him soon with the Raiders and Fernando Mendoza. But they're two quarterbacks, I think, that can get the most out of Pierce in kind of different ways. For Cam Ward, like, he'll throw that thing up there. He is a very aggressive quarterback. The reason I kind of went with Raiders over Titans is that, one, I like Fernando Mendoza's ball placement along the boundary a little bit better than I like Cam Ward. And I also think that Kubiak, as opposed to what I imagine Brian Daboll's offense is going to look like, will be a little bit more condensed, keep Alec Pierce closer to the offensive line, as we saw with some of the receivers in Seattle, give him more space to operate. I think that will make some of those deeper throws a little bit higher percentage, as we saw for Pierce last year in Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah. And just on the Mendoza point, I mean, I do believe his superpower is that back shoulder throw. And I mean, it just seemed like a long handoff at a certain point between him and Charlie Becker, you know, down the stretch of those games last year. So, again, already used to throw into a white field stretch. So let's go ahead and get him out of Pierce. Yeah, I do like the Raiders call.
Yeah, just keep him going. He's already used to it. Let's keep it going. Let's actually go to Wandale Robinson next, because spoiler alert, he was the guy that I had sent going to the Tennessee Titans here. Unfortunately, you know, look, it's former coach connection. This is the way it goes. Wandale Robinson has played with Brian Daboll before. There's already some reports from Jonathan Jones of CBS that the Titans, quote, have their eyes on Wandale Robinson. I think there's a little sameness, Ian, between how I'd like to use Wandale and how I'd like to use Jahmyr Dike as guys from the slot, but also give them some big over routes. That's really how the Giants got more out of Wandale last year, is some of those deeper post routes, how he went from a fake receiver to more of an actual wide receiver in 2025. So that's why I kind of sent them to Tennessee, and they just need bodies at wide receiver, period. You have a different fit here for Mr. Wandale Robinson. Where are you sending him?
odds on favorite. I think you nailed it again, reuniting with Dable. But part of this, Matt, like the teams I'm picking, I'm trying to also keep in mind, like, I don't want to mess up some of the fantasy players I like on the squad. So I want Jamari DK to continue to get a chance to maybe repeat as the NFL's all-purpose yardage leader. What a rookie season that was. Kick return leagues, my God. But give me the Carolina Panthers here, okay? We're getting a wide receiver who's actually shorter than Bryce Young. Get some confidence going there. But just, I think he actually fits in this offense pretty well, okay? We got T-Mac on one side. We got Jalen Coker on the other one. I'm done with Xavier Leggett, okay? Maybe I'll be wrong on that, but I'm not expecting him to, you know, really be factoring in their future plans all that much. And I just think Wandale gives them kind of that reliable underneath target where, yeah, we can go ahead and move the chains and do a few things. Look, hand up. I don't think Wandale Robinson is like a particularly special player, but can he be, you know, a good, a plus level slot receiver for next handful of years? Sure, I think that's fine. So again, I think being the clear wide receiver three in this offense makes sense. Yes, he did earn 140 targets over these past two seasons, and he deserves credit for that. But man, just damning targets in 2024. I know you saw those as well. And then obviously have Malik Nabers out of the picture for the bulk of 2025. So rock solid slot receiver for a Carolina Panthers offense, I think needs a little bit more reliability in their down and down passing game.
Yeah, see, this is, you talk about messing up players that we like. This is why I hate this spot from you, man. I want to see Tetero McMillan ascend even more in year two. And I'm a big—I mean, I know you're a Coker guy too. Like, what are we not taking some of that layup looks away from our guy Jalen Coker? Yeah, that would be that would be very offensive here.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. So again, trying to save Jamari DK. Now I'm throwing Jalen Coker under the bus. I'm hating it the more I talk about it. I'll be honest with you, Matt. Let's put him on the Titans. That's fine.
Well, I do think Carolina is going to look for some different bodies in the pass catching room. I think they could use, honestly, a smaller, you know, speed-based receiver is kind of what they need. So I don't hate your line of thinking there. I just don't want anything bad to happen to Jalen Coker, my favorite deep sleeper wide receiver in the league from last year. Okay, let's go to the next wide receiver here, Romeo Dobbs. Where do you have Dobbs going?
Why'd you skip Rashid Shaheed? We can keep going with Dobbs, but do you mean to do that?
I did mean to do that because I was going to bring it all. I was going to bring it back to Rashid Shaheed. So, fantastic. But keep going here.
Fantastic. Romeo Dobbs. I had the Buffalo Bills originally, and I now think that makes absolutely no sense because the role that he is obviously would have been filling there. I just thought he could be kind of what they wanted Josh Palmer to be, but now they got DJ Moore there. So look, I think Dobbs, like if you go back and kind of think about like the backyard football games back in the day, you know, you kind of got your five or six, you know, attributes and you know, your certain number. I don't think Dobbs has a skill that's like an 8 out of 10, but I think he's kind of a solid 6 out of 10 in pretty much everything. And that works, man. That's a good, solid NFL wide receiver. And I just thought with the Buffalo Bills, like you needed to add someone who can work at all three levels of the field and then also just add a level of professionalism and actually being, you know, a good football player out there. So guessing he's gonna be getting kind of, you know, 10 to 12 millions per year range. And just again, going to the Bills for me is a situation where I just thought he would kind of lift up that entire passing game at least a little bit. So I do wonder if the Packers could just try to bring the guy back. It would be crowded though. Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, Matthew Golden for me would be a pretty fun wide receiver trio. Even Dante and Wick's still hanging around. But I would say, again, Bills, first of all, that was my pick. But we'll go through 49ers now instead.
Yeah, I had him going to the 49ers. And honestly, for a lot of the reasons that you described there, that there's probably nothing that he does that's spectacular. But his best, you know, club in the bag is probably the dig route. He's a little bit of a dig route merchant, to be honest with you. And like, that is a key thing in the 49ers offense. They want to hit those plays over the middle of the field. It's one of the routes that Brock Purdy throws really well. They kind of just need, they quietly need a lot of wide receiver help, man. The San Francisco 49ers kind of quietly need a lot of skill position player help because George Kittle's coming back from an Achilles injury. I know Ian, he allegedly has the good kind of Achilles injury, but still, he's freaking 33 years old and he tore his Achilles, man. I mean, I don't know about that. So I think one thing that also would help with Dobbs as well, I don't know where you are on the Ricky Pearsall truther spectrum. I'm on the very far end of being a Ricky Pearsall truther, but I think part of what would help Pearsall is if they can get a guy like Dobbs to play on ball, be that kind of X receiver, it would allow Pearsall to move around the field a little bit more. So that's one of the reasons I love the 49ers landing spot for him. Knows the offensive language, comes from a similar system, can do some of the things they want from an X receiver, but also would allow them to maximize their third year now wide receiver in Ricky Pearsall.
So I haven't been quite on that train with you from day one with Pearsall, but I'll say this, man, we do have our way too early ranks for you sickos over fantasylife.com. And all of my other brethrens over there have him ranked as like the wide receiver 40 he's being drafted as. Not me. Not here. Top 24 wide receiver right now, Ricky Pearsall. So obviously that could change if we get some more target competition. But dude, the route running is ridiculous. And it really did look like this dude was, you know, ready to just go absolutely nuclear in the first 3 or 4 weeks of last year before those pesky injury gods crept up again. So my one complaint with Ricky is, for as smooth as this dude is as a route runner, like, can we break a tackle every now and again? So like, it doesn't give us anything after the catch, but
isn't it funny? He's a crazy athlete too. Like if you look at his athletic measurables and you never see him like break a tackle.
So he's not the only guy that's like that. We do kind of get that phenomenon going on at wide receiver sometimes. But hey, Brock Purdy, Kyle Shanahan, we know they're going to produce an efficient passing attack. He does, just his level of chemistry with Purdy too seemed like it was on another level, just constantly making catches where he's not even like, you know, getting targeted before he even, you know, makes his break and everything. So I'm with you on Ricky Bullets, you know, doing his thing. And, you know, adding Dobbs wouldn't be the worst thing ever to that idea. So I still think he could, you know, take over. I have a different wide receiver though going to the Niners here in a little bit.
Okay, we will get to that. My guess is that your friends over at Fantasy Life are, you know, Dwayne McFarland.
He's always
number one, cowards. Dwayne's always like, well, his targets per route run. He's not getting the targets per route, whatever. Yeah, I'm sure that's his thing with Ricky Pearsall. Dwayne, give me a break, bro. And it's like, oh, well, he never out-targeted Juwan Jennings. It's hard to tell, man. He was barely healthy last year. But let's talk about Juwan Jennings. He's our next one up here. Where are you sending the, I would guess, former 49ers wide receiver here in a couple of weeks?
I'm going with the New Orleans Saints, the situation where I know they've been common potential partners with Carnell Tate there with pick number 8, and that would be cool. But I think we need to add multiple wide receivers to this offense. Chris Olave is the freaking man. He's going to be the number one, and that's great. I honestly think that's even more of a reason to get someone like Juwan Jennings, someone who doesn't need to be getting 130, 140 targets to positively impact these games. So just, you know, not that I go through and watch, you know, every single wide receiver's block and rest, but man, the highlights we do see from Juwan Jennings, man, as a blocker, pretty freaking special out there. There's a reason why he was, you know, such a fan favorite even before he actually was forced to be more of a, you know, counting number, just accumulator over the course of these past two seasons. So obviously, you know, got that dog in him. It seems like he's every cornerback's least favorite wide receiver in the league, always getting chippy, you know, week in and week out. So a lot to like with Juwan Jennings. And just as much as like every offense could use an Alec Pierce or a Rashid Shaheed and that field stretching wide receiver, having someone like Juwan Jennings as your wide receiver 3, man, where they can take a bigger step up if needed with some injuries, but more often than not can just be, again, doing all those little things right, the gritty things that maybe some other guys aren't willing or even able of doing. I do think he helps out there a lot. So give me him to the New Orleans Saints, another weapon for Tyler Shuck. And again, in a situation where he doesn't need to be leaned on as a true number one.
I like this fit a lot from you, actually, you know, because I think it's kind of the player that the Saints have been trying to acquire. I talked about this at Combine Week with Nate, I believe, where they were the team that the Lions jumped for Isaac Tesla last year. Another big body guy who has experience playing in the slot. Then they go and trade for Devon Vele at the end of the preseason. Then they trade for Jalen Polk before the start of the season, who obviously didn't play last year, but he's kind of a guy who was that big slot flanker type receiver. That's who Juwan Jennings is at his best. I think at times he's had to play as that X receiver for the 49ers when they've had injuries. That to me is not really the best use for him. I think more of, like you said, move him around, use the size, use the physicality, especially in the ground game. I kind of think that's a really nice element that the Saints wide receiver core could use. So I like this fit by you. I also like the one that I sent him to, which is the Baltimore Ravens. And I had a couple of reasons for doing this, Ian. One, I think they're another team that needs wide receiver size in the room. You know, they've got Zay Flowers, who's a really good player, but I think Jennings is the type of guy who wouldn't come in and threaten Flowers necessarily for the number one receiver spot on the team, but he would also allow Flowers to continue to move around. You know, Declan Doyle coming from that Sean Payton, Ben Johnson tree, they like receivers with size. And the other thing that I just couldn't stomach was sending like a veteran receiver to, and I mean like past 30, I know Juwan Jennings is getting up there, but I couldn't send another 30 plus year old receiver to the Baltimore Ravens because my God, there is a graveyard of like, your favorite receiver finished his career with the Baltimore Ravens, and like it was DeSean Jackson, Odell Beckham, Dez Bryant. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins. Like, I do not need to see Mike Evans in a Ravens jersey. Okay. I do not need to see Steph Diggs in a Ravens jersey. And Keenan Allen, any of those guys. So Juwan Jennings is kind of the middle ground there. He's an experienced player, but he's not quite those guys at the peak of their powers either. So that was honestly my biggest reason for sending Jennings to the Baltimore Ravens.
It's so funny to keep buying into the gimmick, though. Baltimore and Tennessee, man, just a graveyard of once great wide receivers who find a way to wear those colors before everything is all said and done. So, no, I think that makes sense. I still am holding out hope for our guy, Rashad Bateman. Obviously, did not have the 2025 we were looking for. But at the peak of his powers, 2024, it was nice. But no, they need someone. And again, I just think, like, as what I was talking about, for the same reasons why you fit in with the Saints, I do think it makes a lot of sense in Baltimore as well.
Yeah, my therapist says I'm not allowed to talk about Rashad Bateman anymore, so I'll let you mention that here on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. I mentioned Mike Evans. Give me your ideal landing spot for the great Mike Evans if he does indeed finally leave Tampa Bay.
This is where I'm going and pulling out my 49ers card, okay? Because, again, we heard it from Mike Evans himself. He kind of gave his four reasons and four, I guess, criteria for a new squad. A quarterback he believes in, Brock Purdy, is number one in NFL freaking history in yards per attempt per passer rating. Call him a system quarterback, you're wrong, but, okay, the system's incredible, so who really cares? Chance at the Super Bowl, yes, the 49ers have that all the time. A top-shelf offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, clears. Head coach, he's the play caller. You guys get it. And a promise of high-volume touches. We just went over the offense. Who knows when George Kittle is going to be back? Allegedly week one with the Achilles. That isn't that bad, but I'm with Matt. Very concerning for someone on the wrong side of 30. And beyond rookie parasol, we just do not have much going on there. So I think the 49ers check all those boxes, you know, with flying colors. I think the Patriots, without Stephon Diggs now, more cleanly check those. I do think your pick as well is in that. I would say the Broncos could also be a fun, you know, potential dark horse. Maybe the overlap is a little too much with him and Courtland Sutton. But there are a handful of teams out there, and I do like the possibility where some of these more handcuffed teams to the cap, at least as far as I can tell, Matt. But then I think I know what's going on with the salary cap, and, you know, they just restructure three deals and all of a sudden $40 million appear out of thin air. So whatever, regardless, Evans, I would imagine he's kind of doing one of these mercenary one-year $20 million sort of deals where I'm guessing it's going to be a lot easier for him to get to one of these contenders he wants to go to. So 49ers make a lot of sense to me. But man, if he winds up over there with the squad you got, man, I wouldn't hate that either.
Yeah, I like the 49ers pick. He would fit perfectly along that route tree. It's very similar what they want out of their primary outside on-ball receiver to what he's been doing the last couple of years, especially. A lot of dig routes, a lot of slant routes. I also think that would make him a pretty good fit for Kansas City, though. And look, I'm playing the hits here, okay? They need a non-Mickey Mouse wide receiver. That's why I sent them Carnell Tate on our last mock draft Monday at the ninth overall pick. But if they want to go the veteran route here, Mike Evans is as non-Mickey Mouse as it gets, man. I mean, he is just a complete professional. I think he would bring some professionalism and size and route running ability to a room that does not have size, does not have professionalism, and does not have route running ability. So, yeah, I think Mike Evans finally did kind of take a small step back as an individual player last year. Kind of hard to tell, though, playing through a lot of injuries. That's probably just baked into the Mike Evans outlook at this point in his career. But, man, he would be a pretty sweet fantasy selection in Kansas City. This is one where I could get excited about. But they'll probably do what you have happening here, Ian, which is that's why I saved Rashid Shaheed, because you see that transition here. Yeah. You're sending Rashid Shaheed to the Kansas City Chiefs because, Ian, one more small, fast guy. Just get Andy one more small, fast guy, and the whole picture becomes more clear.
Look, Rashee Rice could be facing another suspension. It could be even of the longer variety based on his track record. Yeah. I am so tired of watching Mahomes either misfire Xavier Worthy downfield or Worthy running out of bounds when he could have stayed inbounds and catching the football. Like, they are Bo Nix, Troy Franklin level of bad chemistry downfield, whoever you want to blame for it. But Matt, we saw Tyquan freaking Thornton come to Kansas City and lead the NFL in yards per catch and actually have some good moments. They stopped using him after Rashee Rice came back. Honestly, I am, you know, I will. Andy Reid will forget more about football than I will ever know in my life, okay? But for my money's worth, man, I did not know why Hollywood Brown was out there taking away some of the reps that Tyquan Thornton could have been doing. Again, just really threatening defenses. So Rashid Shaheed, premier field stretching threat, led the freaking NFL in yards per target from 2022 to 2024. I was disappointed with how little he was able to get going in Seattle because they had the need. They obviously had the former, you know, Clint Kubiak connection going on there, and Darnold can sling it. So I don't love the fact that our most recent sample was, you know, one of the least productive ones of Shahid's career. But man, to your point, it is one more small, fast guy, but it's a really freaking good small, fast guy, Matt. So again, Shahid on the Kansas City Chiefs, man. A rich man's Tyquan Thornton, if you will. I think a lot of things could really help for that downfield passing game. That, again, is kind of like that Green Goblin mask that keeps calling the Mahomes every offseason.
I mentioned the stat yesterday, or not yesterday, our earlier show this week with Joel Smith, that Tyquan Thornton had 312 yards on throws of 20 plus air yards, which was 71% of his total yards on the season. So Patrick Mahomes can definitely throw to somebody downfield. It just can't be Xavier Worthy. And it's funny, I've seen like Josh Norris, I believe, has said this, that Rashid Shaheed is kind of very similar to Jameson Williams. I would like disagree with that a little bit, that he's actually supposed to, he's what Xavier Worthy's supposed to be. And this is just the real version of that. So as much as it's not exactly what I want to see the Kansas City Chiefs add at wide receiver, I want to see him get like a big on-ball receiver who can consistently win as a route runner. Shahid though can, he's a better route runner, better separator than Xavier Worthy. And I think he has done some on-ball stuff there. So I do like the fit here, even if, again, it's like it's not exactly what I want to see the Chiefs get, but nevertheless, I think it's a good one by you. I had him going to the Buffalo Bills. It could still happen, but my guess is it's probably not going to happen post DJ Moore trade. So we can kind of just move on from that one. He's a little bit of a difficult guy for me to find a fit for, because I honestly, Ian, think that he was used better in Kellen Moore's offense than Clint Kubiak's offense in the late point. If he had just stayed in New Orleans all last year, he probably comes into free agency with better production, to be quite honest. And there's maybe more excitement about him. So I think it kind of takes more of a spread offense that uses a lot of motion at the snap, which I do think Joe Brady leans into a lot of those concepts. But now that they've acquired DJ Moore, I'm guessing they don't pay what it takes for Rashid Shaheed. Real quick before we toss to break, Ian, just want to throw you a grab bag of veteran wide receivers that maybe have some gas still left in the tank. Stephon Diggs, we've alluded to it a couple times during the show. He was released by the New England Patriots. He's probably the guy of this bunch that's coming off the most productive season. Tyreek Hill, Deebo Samuel, Christian Kirk, Keenan Allen. Any of these guys light your fire? Any landing spot you think sticks out for one of these five players here?
Tyreek would be the guy, but I hate the Tom Pelissero tweets where he's saying when or if Tyreek is going to be able to play this year, man. That knee injury is right. Just all kinds of rough. And now they're talking about that perennial nerve, like a Jalen Smith injury, where you just kind of need to wear out the fire. So I don't know if Tyreek's even going to be back this year, but he would be the guy. I think it'd be Stephon Diggs, though, man. Everything he was able to do in New England, I know he's not like, he probably shouldn't be your number one engine of your passing game, but if he can be an overqualified number two somewhere, man, I still think there's a lot he can do in the intermediate areas of the field. I don't think we have a perfect separation metric, but I appreciate the websites out there that go ahead and try. And, you know, ESPN Open Score has a lot of good things to say about Diggs. And I do think it kind of, and you know this better than me, obviously, so I'd like to hear your thoughts too. But I think when you look at the ESPN Open Score and you see the guys who can't separate, it's all kind of field stretchers, running routes where it's going to be harder to separate, I think, on a, you know, more per route basis. So it does make sense where someone like Diggs is popping. But man, coming back from that knee injury, his efficiency was looking better than ever. He made some really big plays, obviously, in that first Bills game. And just having over 1,000 yards, man, I'm more like 108 targets. I still think there's some gas in the tank for Stephon Diggs. So no, not a legit number one, but as long as the legal stuff gets figured out with Diggs, man, I still think he could be a very good number two or three in a number of offenses.
Yeah, the legal stuff obviously is the biggest hurdle for him to clear, and I think that probably had something to do with why he's no longer on the New England Patriots roster. But I'm with you. I thought he played well last year. He kind of actually took a little bit to get going, really had a great kind of early to middle part of the season, and then sort of kind of faded as the year went on. But how much of that was just the offense being dysfunctional? How much of that was him? I still think he can play. I think he would be a reliable target for a veteran quarterback. He actually would kind of make sense with the Chiefs, I think, too. Give them a little bit of a layup player. We know they've never been shy of taking chances on some interesting personalities. So yeah, he's clearly, to me, of the five guys here, got the most gas left in the tank. We are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we're going to go through free agent quarterbacks and where they might land right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to play some matchmaker with upcoming free agents. Let's get into quarterback here, and let's get into the prize of the quarterback landscape, which, imagine if you would have said that a calendar year ago. It is Malik Willis. Yes, the crown jewel of free agency. I'll be honest, Ian. The I think the obvious landing spot, the chalky one at this point, has emerged to be the Arizona Cardinals. I wanted to go a different direction. You went a different direction as well. Tell us where you are sending Malik Willis.
And I get it with the Cardinals, Mike LaFleur, Matt LaFleur connection going on. Obviously, they want to try and replace Kyler Murray, but I don't know. Man, I think Kyler Murray's better than Malik Willis, but that's a conversation for another day. I got the Dolphins. It's another Packers connection. And again, just because there is a connection doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be a good one. But obviously, Packers DC Jeff Hafley, now the Miami head coach, and even their GM, John Eric Sullivan, was in that Green Bay front office as well. So I will say for Malik, as much as it is a small sample that we're working with, we couldn't ask for a better one, man. Like, good luck finding a passing efficiency stat that he's not number one in, man. So the EPA, completion percentage over expected, yards per attempt, like all of these. But it comes again with that massive caveat of it being a small sample size. I love following Kurt Warner on Twitter. He's always getting into him, people, and, you know, presenting his thoughts. And he was saying, after going through and kind of removing the scrambles, you know, the quick under 2 second passes and screens, like, he only counted 28 true dropbacks over these past two seasons, which is a ridiculously small number. But if you watch those, you're seeing him drop balls 40 yards downfield in the buckets to Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs. And then everything he does with his feet and, like, legit 4.4 speed. I mean, number one in the NFL in yards per carry on read options over these past 2 years, number four in yards per scramble. So he does have the tools to threaten defenses to every square inch of the football field. Could it go wrong because you got to run a little bit of a gimmicky offense? Sure, but I don't know about you, Matt. I was more encouraged, though, with the two games we saw in 2025 versus 2024. It seemed like LaFleur is more one to let him, you know, test defenses downfield. It was very schemey, very run-heavy in 2024, but I was encouraged in 2025, and let's face it, man, wherever he goes, like, this is going to be your favorite fantasy nerd's favorite late-round quarterback because he runs the ball, and it seems to keep on working for us.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you guys, like, for multiple, I'm going to be super honest in this entire segment here about Malik Willis. But number one, Malik Willis, you know, when he came in for Jordan Love on that Saturday Bears game, I remember thinking, to your point, oh boy, here we go. Here comes the Mickey Mouse Malik Willis offense. It's time to get back to high school football here with what we're about to see with Malik Willis. And yeah, Ian, on some of those Saturday games, you know, during when I don't have to instant react, you know, I might be maybe a gummy or two, you know, along the way. Okay. So I'm feeling excited, you know, for these games. Then we get Malik Willis drop that go route to Romeo Doubs. I mean, I've never been more excited in my entire life. He couldn't, you know, again, substances included here. He could have walked down the field and handed that to Romeo Doubs. It wouldn't have been a better throw. Unbelievable stuff there from Malik Willis. I agree. We saw more from him as a passer in this brief sample from this past year. I do think he would run a fun offense with the Miami Dolphins. My question is, can they afford him? The Cardinals probably can't afford him, but I am very, honestly, I'm very spooked about the fact that Boone pointed this out last week. If Malik Willis goes to the Cardinals, all that passing volume that those guys benefited from last year, Trey McBride, Michael Wilson, Marvin Harrison Jr. for a brief tiny bit before he got hurt, that is going to go completely away with Malik Willis. So I decided, again, to be honest with the people out there and transparent, send him to the Atlanta Falcons. We don't care about passing volume with the Atlanta Falcons. Run a great and fun running game with Bijan Robinson in the backfield. They literally have one wide receiver, and that's it. Drake London. Just throw that guy the ball over and over again on the first read before you take off and run. I think from a fantasy standpoint, send him to Atlanta, everybody wins in that situation.
Except Michael Penix. But maybe Michael Penix doesn't deserve to be winning right now, coming off the knee injury. I mean, and just, man, it's just, we don't have to do this, but gun to your head, do you think Michael Penix has it? Because I don't really think so, man.
No. I think here's the problem with, and I think especially, my guess is that the guys in Atlanta in charge, and like, I could be totally wrong about this, but my guess is they probably feel the same way, because I think if you look at it like, oh, he's only been in the league for 2 years and he was the 8th overall pick, like, you got to give him another shot. That was a terrible pick at 8th overall. Like, nobody else thought he was the 8th overall pick in the draft except the two guys who got fired from the Atlanta Falcons. So I think that's the problem here. You know, I would guess that I mean, maybe he gets another shot at it, but I don't know if he can hold the job long. You mentioned that the Arizona Cardinals are essentially just saying, like, hey, goodbye, Kyler Murray. And hopefully, like, this mystery box could be anything. It could even be Kyler Murray if they sign Malik Willis. Well, let's talk about Kyler Murray here. I'll give my landing spot for him first, because spoiler alert for my Aaron Rodgers landing spot, it's retire. Okay. Just retire. And we don't need to do the Rodgers thing. If he's already ready, if he's not ready right now to say he's coming back, if I'm Pittsburgh, that's it. I'm moving on. I either need to know now or never. So why don't the Steelers go sign Kyler Murray for the minimum? I think he would be a really fun fit in Mike McCarthy's offense with a lot of slants and quick hitters. So I'm sending Kyler Murray to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Ian, I could be interested in a Kyler Murray Pittsburgh Steelers pairing, because I kind of think that roster, good offensive line, like it's a little bit underrated right now from the usual Steelers malaise.
And just like the training camp pictures with Kyler and Darnell Washington are going to be absolute cinema, man. We got to be considering that, you know, before
I didn't even think about that, but that's great. That is, dude, Kyler Murray, DK Metcalf, Darnell Washington. I mean, that's like that is a perfect like Russian doll sort of situation. We need those pictures. Okay. So now this landing spot needs to happen even more.
We can bring back that Mike Leach idea where, like, you know, Darnell just literally chucks Kyler over the line of scrimmage and we see what happens. That could be, you know, the tush throw or something like that going on.
The tush throw.
I think the Steelers, right? I think the Steelers make a lot of sense. I'm going with the Vikings just because I think of all these teams that need a quarterback realistically to start this year, Vikings are the best offensive environment by far. So trying to do a solid for Kyler Murray. Had some amazing years that I get it are going increasingly, you know, far in the rearview mirror. It was not great before he got injured in 2025 and even 2024. I know the EPA and some of the numbers painted a more positive picture, but nothing, it just seemed all that easy. It's like he either needs to get, to your point, get the ball out quick, which could work out nice in Pittsburgh, or run around and do something with his legs. So, you know, I just think it's a factor of being a 5'10" quarterback, man. Like, as much as people want to make fun of that and dismiss it, like, there is a reason why I think top quarterback prospects are ideally 6'5", and it's just tougher for Kyler to throw over the middle of the field. But in Minnesota, I think, again, with KOC, with Jefferson, with Addison, like, you're giving him the best offensive environment possible, as long as KOC is willing to build the offense around him, which, you know, if they're going out there and trying to make this, would do it. So my big thing for the Vikings, they're 1 year removed from winning 14 games, man. I know you got your quarterback to go there, and I think that could work as well. But, like, I feel like we're only looking for Minnesota with some of these more veteran options who, let's face it, just aren't very good. Kyler, I still believe, has a chance to be a top 15 quarterback in the NFL. I realize he wasn't that last year. I think the Vikings give him the best chance to be that again.
Yeah, I mean, 2024, he actually was pretty good in 24, and he wasn't a good fit at all in Drew Petzing's offense. Like, my take on the Petzing, Marvin Harrison, Kyler Murray situation is just like, they all just needed to get away from each other. I actually think they can be good, just they can't be good together, like all three of them. And I think that they all now have a chance to prove that here. I think Kyler in Minnesota would be fun. I do think he cuts out a big portion of the playbook in terms of the middle of the field stuff, but they apparently already cut that out for JJ McCarthy last year. So fine, just leave it out of the playbook and you'll get a better version of it with Kyler Murray. But that kind of is why I sent Geno Smith to the Minnesota Vikings here. And look, we're operating under the assumption that he is going to get released and that he'll do the same thing that Kyler is going to be doing, which is playing for the veteran minimum, because the Raiders will be footing the bill for his salary after they do eventually release him and pave the way for Fernando Mendoza to start week one. And look, Geno, are they going to win a Super Bowl with Geno? No. I don't think the Vikings are good enough to win a Super Bowl this year anyways. I think the roster is more flawed than people think. But he is good enough to come in there and just chuck the ball downfield 150-plus times to Justin Jefferson, which, to be honest, Ian, that's kind of all I care about with this offense at this point.
Hey, certainly with Geno would be an improvement over the artist known as Nine. So I hear you there. And that would, I think, just be the difference there. I think with Brian Flores in that defense, like, we could have a team actually contending in the NFC. But, you know, if they are a little bit more flawed, to your point, would make sense to do more of a situation like Geno. And I'll say this too, man. As much as, yeah, okay, Geno was horrible with the Raiders, it's one of these situations where we're like, well, your play caller was horrible. How is Ashton Jeanty going to succeed in that environment? Like, I think we got to give a little bit of slack to Geno from that.
Yeah.
After he played three great years in Seattle, man. As much as everyone wants to dunk on Mina Kimes and all these people for ranking Geno as like a top 10 quarterback, he was right on that border from 2022 to 2024. I don't think him being horrible in Vegas is like a complete just insult to people that were ranking him as a top 10 quarterback before that even happened. So, you know, just one of those things with any quarterback ranking, it's going to go haywire and everything like that. But just a little more respect to Geno's name. But I think the bigger point here would just be like, yeah, I hear you. Don't exactly think he's going to be pushing them to contender status. And I would like to see the Vikings try to still do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I like the soft spot with Minnesota. He gets to finish his career with a little more dignity. The Geno truthers out there get to finish their run here with Geno with a little more dignity if he goes to Minnesota. Plus, all the way, by the way, it also cleans like a funny loop. Like closes a funny loop with the Sam Darnold thing too. Sam Darnold leaves Minnesota, goes to Seattle, pushes Geno to Vegas. He comes back and saves Minnesota. It's fun. Speaking of closing the loop here, you're not giving Geno Smith a soft landing spot where he's going.
I was about to say, we're completing the circle in a different way. We're going back to the New York Football Jets. I just want Garrett Wilson to get his 180 targets and put up the 1,700 yards that we know Garrett Wilson is plenty capable of doing. Pure talent standpoint, man, I really – and you can probably prove me wrong if you actually went through it. But Garrett Wilson is the legit top five elite talent, you know, as a wide receiver stands. And I would just love to see him get a chance to finally have plus quarterback play. He was already starting to do it with Justin Fields, who everyone agrees is the worst passer freaking ever, man. Geno Smith over there with the Jets, I do think could bring out some better things with him. So would this be great for the 2026 Jets? Would it be great for Geno? No, it would be great for Garrett Wilson, though, Matt. And that's what I'm in the business of doing.
I'm with you on that one. I love Garrett Wilson. I want him to get that bump that like a guy like Terry McLaurin got when Jaden Daniels got there. He was just constantly in quarterback hell, and then 13 touchdowns right away. He was always capable of being that guy. He was that guy. Would love to see that happen here. That's not quite what's happening. If it's Geno Smith necessarily, but I like the idea of him just coming in there and recklessly throwing the football downfield to Garrett Wilson. Nate has also posited the theory about Jacoby Brissett being traded for a late round pick to the Jets because there's a connection with Frank Reich. And if we can get the fantasy scam going that Jacoby Brissett pulled off in Arizona last year, just drop back, push that ball downfield for Garrett Wilson. Ian Harditz and I are in the business of making Garrett Wilson happy. That would make us happy. I'm not happy about the Rodgers thing, but again, he's our next guy on the list here. My landing spot for him was retire. He's talking about his wife on Pat McAfee, yesterday. Go be with her. Go spend some time with her. Be a happy guy there. He's talking about working out and stuff. Cool. Go do that. I'm done with Rodgers, but you want to send him back to Pittsburgh.
Kyler would be the one quarterback where I think we're looking at him and saying, okay, that's someone who legit, if he has a good year in 2026, like he could be the Steelers quarterback for the next 5+ years, potentially. I think that's how good Kyler could be. Beyond Kyler, though, where's the better option than Rodgers at this point? As much as he's a show of his former self, man, like there were times last year where especially when DK was suspended, it's like, well, what's he supposed to do with the football? We have MBS. We have, like, there's the one game, I think, against Cleveland, like, they keep testing Denzel Ward with MVS, which I realize is freaking beyond sad to watch time and time again. But what are your other options? Adam Thielen? I think it's hilarious watching Darnell Washington get targets, but like they really have nowhere else to throw the football to. Kenneth Gainwell and Jaylen Warren just getting these quick dink and dunk passes really was one of the best ways to move the offense. So no, Rodgers doesn't give them a chance to, you know, any playoff game, it's going to be like bringing a knife to a gunfight with Aaron Rodgers. And we saw that against the Houston Texans. Didn't even have to face one of the elite dual threat quarterbacks for Pittsburgh to get their round one L again. But just, I do think he deserves a little bit more credit than he's maybe getting for kind of dragging an offense that didn't really have too many places to go with the football. Like, if Rodgers is so freaking bad, man, like, what's to say about the handful of quarterbacks like Bryce Young, like Tua, like Jacoby Brissett, like the Saints guys, who actually were worse than Aaron Rodgers in the EPA per dropback, man. So I do think there's a little bit of everyone being sick and tired of Rodgers, which I get it. Shut up, dude. I get it. But at the same time, man, he's still probably, what, the 23rd, 24th best quarterback in the league?
Yeah. I mean, you are correct from a take standpoint. I'll admit it. I just don't want to watch it again. I just don't think Rodgers' brand of offense is particularly appealing in the year 2026. I don't love the idea of him getting back together with Mike McCarthy. That doesn't necessarily do it for me. So yeah, I just to me, no thanks. Let's try something different here. Final free agent quarterback to talk through, Marcus Mariota. Okay. You've got him going. Talk. You're not jazzed about Marcus Mariota?
No. All right. It was fine. The Denver game was really good. I saw it. And it was surprising to see him actually have better numbers than Daniels, but just. No, we already did the thing. We gave him a second chance with the Atlanta Falcons. Like, this is a complete bridge backup quarterback. And the fact that he actually is in competition to be one of the better potential week one starters out there, I think speaks to just how bad of a quarterback class it is. So, look, I'll take him over Tua, but that bar could not be lower at the moment. So put him in Atlanta, and we'll see if Penix still has it.
Yeah, I do think the bridge is probably burned with the Falcons after he quite literally quit the team. I know that was a different group of decision makers and all that. It was actually two head coaches ago, because that's how things change quickly in the NFL. I'm with you on Mariota not being exciting, but I also know the Dolphins aren't really trying to be exciting in 2026. That's why I sent him to Miami here. Just a fun little offense with him and Devon Achane, Jalen Waddle, the whole deal. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and send him to Miami. He's 13th. In EPA per dropback over the last 2 years combined, right behind Jaden Daniels. So, Mariota's just giving us a little bit. He'll give the Dolphins a little bit, get the football to Jalen Waddle, and get out, log out, and get another quarterback in 2027. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk through tight end landing spots right after this. All right, we're back. Not the most exciting group of tight ends necessarily in free agency, but it would be disrespectful to ignore these guys. So, Ian, let's start with Isaiah Likely here, who is a really fascinating player, young guy, did not get the extension. Mark Andrews gets the extension in Baltimore. Where are you sending him in free agency?
Really, I think if we saw him enter free agency after 2024, it would have had an even bigger market. But, guy fractured his foot in training camp, and then once he starts playing through it, I don't think we probably remember the injuries as much as we should. So I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs because, Matt, we see this every year. There's always a couple players. Like, I remember Kenneth Gainwell had a really good game against the Steelers, and then they went ahead and signed him the next time. Like, we see teams sign players who had really good games against them, and you look at Likely's best game ever, man. That week one 2024 masterpiece, 111 yards and the touchdown, with being like freaking that much on his foot, a toe length away from a second touchdown at the end of regulation, really was him at his best. Also, think stylistically, like, he is, having played with Lamar Jackson, very good at working in the scramble drill, finding those zones to sit down in, things that, again, getting a year to learn under Travis Kelce, if he's going to be back, could be nice in Kansas City. So it is tough. You just don't know how many teams could be willing to feature Likely in a true every down role like we want to see in fantasy land. But given Kansas City's history, with some of the move tight ends, worst case, it's a huge upgrade over Noah Gray, for this year. And best case, I do think he could be a long-term starting tight end for him.
I love it, Ian. You're just saying the Chiefs are going to commit to the bit here. They're going to get one more small, fast wide receiver and one more fake tight end who can't block but can run routes downfield, and then we're going back to the Super Bowl. They're sticking to their guns here in Ian's fantasy world. I'm going to send him to the New York Jets, which, just like, look, is that great for anybody involved? Probably not. Maybe if it's the Geno Smith or Jacoby Brissett fantasy scam, Isaiah Likely could have some fun doing that. But they've got Mason Taylor. Didn't really show too much last year, but, flashed a little bit. Maybe they could do some fun 12 personnel stuff where Mason Taylor's the inline guy. And the reality is, like, the Jets have just way too much money to sit and not do anything. They're going to give some young player, I think, a big contract. Isaiah Likely's still a pretty young guy, so I will send him there. Ian, you were laughing about this guy when we were on one of the breaks. Cade Otton, though, I think is a fun addition to this free agent market. Maybe not for fantasy, but in real life, I think he's going to benefit some team, which is why I'm sending him to the Commanders. I think they need an inline tight end as they go to more of this under center world, get their run game going away from the Cliff Kingsbury shotgun, no huddle nonsense. We're doing more traditional NFL stuff under David Blau here, coming off that Ben Johnson coaching tree while he was he's a backup quarterback, basically a coach. I think they need a more true inline guys. Zach Ertz, bad injury at the end of last season. He signs with the Commanders, gives them an outlet receiver, but a guy who mostly is going to block in the run game. Where are you sending the great Cade Otton?
You just pissed off some Ben Sinnott truthers out there, Matt. This was finally supposed to be his year after Ertz. I don't know. There might be dozens out there somewhere. So I don't know, man. I will say this. You also might be the first fantasy or even NFL person to actually put fun and Kate Otten in the same sentence. I can't think of like a single – I cannot think in my mind right now of like a Kate Otten highlight. I know he had the stretch when all the wide receivers were hurt in 2024. But yes. He's just like on a scale from
go back and watch those games, Ian. Come on.
When everyone ceases to exist in an offense, Kate Otten can be fine. So he's fine. He's a good NFL player. I get it. I'm not giving him enough credit. But just I'm imagining like if I was 16 years old and my favorite team gave Kate Otten like a $30 million contract, I'd be pissed. You know? Come on. It's Kate Otten, Matt.
Fair enough. You're sending him to the Miami Dolphins, which I think is fair punishment for how much you hate Kate Otten, apparently. Real quick, let's talk Dallas Goedert, who is probably the biggest name available at tight end. Where are you sending Dallas Goedert here in free agency?
I'm going Tennessee. I think he, you know, you had your Wandale signing there, which I think makes sense. Goedert would kind of fulfill just giving some reliability to a passing game that has absolutely none right now. So underneath intermediate areas of the field, he can do everything. He can help, you know, improve the run game as a blocker. Chigozie Okonkwo also is a free agent. So I know Gunnar Helm did some good things last year, but let's not get too carried away. They also have the cap room to go ahead and give Dallas Goedert a nice chunk of change, which he deserves. We'll say out of the 13 touchdowns last year, 10 of them came from inside the 10-yard line, 8 came from inside the 5-yard line. So I do think those counting numbers a little bit inflated. And, you know, it takes some skill to score, but you guys watch those back and make up your own mind. I, though, Matt, and I'm appalled by your landing spot here. Tyler Warren, Josh Downs, like, why do you not want good things in Indianapolis, man? They don't need Goddard.
They don't need Goddard, but both of their depth tight ends, Granson and the great Mo Alie-Cox, are free agents. So I'm literally sending him there because he's just depth. He's not going to take Tyler Warren's job. He's just depth. They got into much more heavier personnel packages last season, and he's got familiarity with Shane Steichen. So that was quite literally the only reason I sent him there. And I just don't think Dallas Goedert has all that much left. But I think he would be a nice, reliable guy in Tennessee because young quarterback's best friend. It's that tight end. So I like that pick by you, Ian. All right, we are going to take our last break. We're going to hit the running back landing spots on the other side of this quick break. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. So let's get into it, Ian. Let's give some landing spots for what I think actually is the best group we've talked about. This is a really good free agent running back class. So like a real professional, let's do it after we've done an hour of nonsense on the other on the other positions. Completely great podcasting here. Let's talk Kenneth Walker, who had a great Super Bowl. Super Bowl MVP Kenneth Walker. Where are you sending him in free agency?
Super Bowl MVP, and then also, like, given the relative lackluster nature of the NFL draft running backs outside of Jeremiah Love, of course, it would make sense that these guys really can get a nice bag for themselves. So I'm going to send Kenneth Walker to the Chicago Bears, okay? I do think there are a handful of teams that maybe have cleaner depth charts right now, but DeAndre Swift is one of these guys where he is, you know, on all the cap casualty lists. So I do think in this circumstance, we see Swift out of the picture, and Walker gets to kind of replace him and just add even that much more juice to a run game that was good last year, but like, let's add a legit high-end talent in the form of Kenneth Walker and not, you know, just keep going back the well with DeAndre Swift and Kyle Manon guys. So I think this could take them from good to great on the ground, and just everything Walker can do, man, in terms of breaking tackles, top two at the position in each of the past three seasons. I do think sometimes us fantasy nerds overstate exactly, you know, how good he is. Success rate is a very useful measure for just, again, how often they're consistently kind of getting the needed yards. And last year he was a third worst back in football, and then I think that really is where the difference between him and Zach Charbonnet stands out the most. But then again, you got Kyle Manon guy to kind of put his head down and go ahead and get those tough third and twos anyway. So I think the fit works, and just the Bears are one of these teams where I like your call too, man. I think that fits very cleanly right now. But like, again, if DeAndre Swift is indeed going to be out of the picture here, I think the Bears instantly become one of these top landing spots here for a running back.
I like it. And I like his pairing with Kyle Manunga. That was, I think, the best point that he made there was it just would be a really good, you know, Kenneth Walker's going to get those explosives. Kyle Manunga is going to help you steadily move the football down the field. So yeah. I don't know if the Kenneth Walker bros would hate Menungai as much as they hated Zach Charbonnet, but you know, that's always how it goes with the Kenneth Walker bros. I think they'd be pretty happy if he ended up in Washington. My like February obsession, Ian, has been, what is this Commander's offense going to look like under David Blau? Because I think it is going to quietly look pretty different than what Cliff Kingsbury's brought us. I think it's going to be more of a traditional NFL offense, a lot more under center stuff, play action shots over the middle of the field. Well, you need a good run game if you're going to do that. It helps at least. And there's just been a lot of smoke about the Commanders wanting to add a back. I think they'd love if Jeremiah Love fell to their pick. I don't know at this point if they can. I don't know if they can count on that though at this point. So they're going to walk into free agency and grab Kenneth Walker, who's not the same class of back at all as Jeremiah Love, but another guy who can create those explosive plays. And man, I'll tell you what, a Jaden Daniels, Kenneth Walker two in the backfield, that's going to be tough for people to deal with this fall.
And just right now, man, Eckler, Rodriguez, McNichols, like Bill Kroskamara is the only running back they have under contract. So they really are going to need to go ahead and make a big splash. I certainly do think it makes a lot of sense there. Also, I think either of these spots, I mean, we're probably going to be looking at Walker as a legit top 12 running back in fantasy land. Bucky Irving, Josh Jacobs, Chase Brown, those are kind of like the RB 12 through 14 right now. And even if you still prefer them over K9 in any of these spots, man, I do think that'd be the appropriate tier for him.
Yeah, it's a great point. I was like kind of mixed on Walker last year. I was like a centrist with Kenneth Walker. I think I'd be willing to walk to the other side of the aisle and be very embracing of Kenneth Walker in Washington. So yeah, I think that would be fun. Going to be a really interesting player to see where he ends up. So Kenneth Walker is out of Seattle in both of our scenarios here. I'm actually going to replace him with our next player here, which is Tyler Allgeier. Send him to Seattle. I talked about this on 301 with Nate the other day. I think he's just a good zone system back. It's pretty clear. They want to still run that outside zone run game, bringing Brian Flory over from the San Francisco 49ers to replace Clint Kubiak, who's off to the Raiders. Tyler Allgeier knows how to run in a zone-based system, but he also can do some gap stuff. He's tough. He's powerful. He's essentially kind of like a souped-up Zach Charbonnet, but just not as useful in the passing game as Charbonnet is. And, man, there's just a clear runway for somebody in Seattle if Walker's out the door and Zach Charbonnet is not playing until late in the season. So I'm sending it to Seattle to replace Kenneth Walker.
Does all the little things well, too, that maybe, you know, Walker's lacking a little bit. And Tyler Allgeier, all-time NFL leader as things stand right now in most career touches with 737 and zero fumbles to his name. He was PFF's second-highest pass blocker last season. Success rate during his career, man, 12th among 56 running backs since 2022. Just a good rock solid sound football player, and pairing him up with Charbonnet, like that would be the sort of situation too, Matt, where I think that's almost underrated, where it's like when we think of running back duos, we kind of want the thunder and lightning, you know, the slasher and then, you know, the ground and pound guy. I think having two running backs with similar skill sets, like the Los Angeles Rams and Kyron Williams and Blake Corum, like I'd argue that's almost better because you're that much more, you know, unpredictable against defenses. So Allgeier and Charbonnet though, man, that really would be a nice pairing. I got him in Arizona. Again, James Conner looking like he's probably played his last down there. He's on that same cap casual list as DeAndre Swift. And I just think him and Trey Benson could be a nice little duo there, but I would not be hating that Seattle pairing either.
Either way, man, I feel like either of these landing spots, he is definitely going to be a hipster favorite of mine next year is Tyler Allgeier. I just think he's a good back. I love all those stats that you laid out there about Tyler Allgeier, Ian, so much so that I linked your tweet about it in my free agency article. So, yeah, great stuff there from Tyler Allgeier. All right, let's go to Travis Etienne here. Where are you sending Travis Etienne?
I'm going the Broncos, and I think this would be a spot where, RJ Harvey, truthers, you guys are mad. I don't care. He should be better at football, so someone like Etienne doesn't have to come in and take his job.
RJ Harvey, folks, deal with it, bro. Like, you're getting – very few things have been more clear than the Broncos are adding a back. Like, that is happening. So, RJ Harvey, truthers, you have just a few more days here to harden your hearts and, like, come to terms with this before it actually happens. So get to work on your self-care. That's happening. Get ready for it.
But honestly, like if they don't, it sounds like they want to make a splash. Okay. The Broncos, the other team reported that was in on David Montgomery. So I would guess they're not going to bring back J.K. Dobbins, but Dobbins was so good for them last year, man. Just doing the kind of under center runs and, you know, reading the right hole, things that, you know, a rookie running back like RJ Harvey weren't quite ready to do. I do think Etienne could, you know, just be a, I guess, better version of Dobbins at this point, but maybe not, man. This one shocked me because for my money's worth, Matt, you know, as a big time annoying Buckeye fan. Like, you know, I've watched a lot of college football over the years. The two most explosive collegiate running backs I remember just scaring the crap out of me playing them were Saquon Barkley, obviously at Penn State, and then Clemson Travis Etienne pre-Liz Frank, man. Absolute electricity every single time he touched the football. And that's just not the same guy. In the year 2025, the fine folks at Next Gen Stats told us that J.K. Dobbins actually reached a faster top speed than Etienne. Remember everyone literally making fun of how slow Dobbins was back in 2024, you know, whenever he hit the open field. So J.K. Dobbins, Chris Rodriguez, Chuba Hubbard, Blake Corum, all were faster than ETN last year. And that really did surprise me. But I don't think it's even, you know, it's obviously not wrong. It's actual data. Maybe Schefter can give us, you know, some notes from agents actually telling us that they had their hand time. That's a different one, but that's a story for another day. But dude, like, it just worries me with ETN, having watched last year. I'm not even trying to make this like a baseball toot and should have been playing point. ETN was fine, but he went from 5 yards per carry in weeks 1 through 9, 3.6 in the second half of the year. He had the receiving production. I felt like a lot of that was of Liam Cohen's doing, and he had to catch the ball, but let's face it, he was wide open a lot. Like, I think it's Kenneth Walker and Breece Hall was definitely in that top tier. I think there's a tier drop, and then there's Travis ETN. And if we had to look at these guys and just be like, could there be a running back who gets this big money and then, like, we're just kind of disappointed by it? Unfortunately, I think it could be Travis Etienne.
Yeah, I don't hate that at all. And I actually come back to, with your landing spot here in Denver, I come back to the point you made previously, which is like, I kind of think there's some sameness a little bit between Travis Etienne and RJ Harvey in terms of, like, you both of them are probably better pass catchers than they are runners. I think that at this point, ETN's definitely a better runner than RJ Harvey is, but they might actually benefit from working together. They might give Denver more multiplicity in the run game. Whereas last year, it's like, okay, RJ Harvey's on the field. Like, this is a passing play. Before Dobbins got hurt, then he had to obviously be the full-time guy, but he was definitely a guy that was a little bit of a tell last year. ETN would help them kind of blur the lines there. In terms of my fit here, I'm sending him to Kansas City. There's been some smoke about this one. I don't think ETN is for everybody. I do agree with your analysis that he is a bit of a teardrop from Kenneth Walker, at least from an upside standpoint. But he was a pretty good zone runner for the Jacksonville Jaguars last year. That was sort of the system that they used, even though Liam Cohen was more of a gap-based scheme guy in his 1 year with Tampa Bay. And he is good in the passing game. Like, he's good from not like running routes, but being a screen guy. Like, he can do that.
Yeah.
Chiefs love their screens, man. So zone runner, schemed up touches to the running back. I think Travis Etienne would fit in Kansas City in that regard. It's funny, actually, because we're overlapping here on a lot of different landing spots because I think it's kind of obvious which teams need running back. So as we go to Rico Dowdle here, he's the guy that I'm sending to Denver to be the complement to RJ Harvey. And maybe he is a little bit more of a true complement to Harvey, like lets them kind of leave the door open that Harvey can still be good. But if not, like, Dowdle's had 1,000 yards in back-to-back seasons. He's a pretty damn good runner himself. And I think if he has to start for Denver, it would be a nice landing spot for a team with a really good offensive line and a solid rushing ecosystem.
Yeah, even 1,300 plus when you include some of the receiving stuff. Like, he is a capable three down back. You got him going the Broncos and being the 1A there. I got him going to Seattle and kind of mixing in with Charbonnet, probably taking on the lion's share of work while Charbonnet recovers from the ACL. But then, you know, just being a nice 1A, 1B, whatever they want to use afterwards. So, again, not to do the first half, second half split thing again, but I guess I am going to do it. It makes sense that running backs, as they go throughout a season, they wear down a little bit. But man, when you see the massive drop off, that's just where the problem is. Because literally as soon as everyone, and including the Panthers, was like, okay, Rico's the best running back here. Sorry, Chuba, you're going to be our number two. Rico fell off a cliff, man. 5.6 yards per carry in the first 9 weeks of the year, just 3.2 in the second half. So I know he was banged up, as are most people, and we never quite know how injured these guys are and everything. But just, again, seeing it in a backfield where Chuba was actively making more out of his opportunities down the stretch, man, not great. So I did think it was funny how Rico tried to kind of go out into the analytics streets himself on Twitter, and he kind of posted the graph that had the yards before contact being down, but also kind of showed his yards after contact were down as well. So I appreciate Rico trying to get all analytical, but maybe backfired just a little bit there. But either way, long story short, back-to-back, very productive years. Obviously going to get a little bit of a bag here. I think either the Broncos or the Seahawks would be good for him in fantasy land.
Yeah, no question. He clearly views himself as a starter. It might be tough to find a place where he's a true workhorse like he wanted to be, but I think either of these two spots, he would be the favorite to be the 1A in the backfield, at least early on in the season. Let's get to Kenny Gainwell here, Steelers MVP of last year, Kenneth Gainwell. I would guess if in your situation, Rodgers comes back, he's coming right back to Pittsburgh too. I think that actually would be a pretty nice fit for him, but we've got him going elsewhere. Where are you sending Kenny Gainwell?
Dude, just whenever you can find that pass-catching friendly RB with the geriatric old quarterback, I mean, that's just what PPR dreams are made of. So I think that would be best for Gainwell going back to Pittsburgh. Otherwise, though, I think him and Jordan Mason could form a nice little 1-2 punch there in Minnesota. Obviously, the team doesn't have much salary cap space, but accordingly, man, like, I don't think Gainwell is necessarily going to be fetching $10-12 million per year anyway. So Gainwell, you know, one of many just kind of freaks to come out of that Memphis backfield over the years. The Antonio Gibsons, Daryl Hendersons, Tony Pollards of the world. Gainwell's another one that, again, can do a little bit of everything for you. So yeah, man, I just think him and Mason really would be a nice 1-2. We'll see, you know, who ends up being quarterback. Obviously more pass down upside if it's gonna be a Geno versus a Kyler Murray there. But Kenneth Gainwell, as you said, man, team MVP Kenneth Gainwell, good football player. I think he's gonna help really any offense he ends up on.
I agree, would pretty much help any offense. I think he would help the New Orleans Saints, which is where I've got him going. I don't know what's gonna happen to Alvin Kamara, you know, but I think Kamara's days as a feature back there are definitely done. Maybe a little bit too overlappy if Kamara's back as the, you know, kind of passing down guy, but this is an offense that wants to spread the field, does want to get into the gun. I really like Kellen Moore's offense. I think it's really well designed. I think that whole coaching staff there has been pretty impressive, actually, quietly in their first year. And I think that they'd use Kenny Gainwell well. I mean, he'd be a good outlet receiver for Tyler Shuck. Like, they want to have some quicker routes, but also some deeper shots as well. And just like a check down option for Tyler Shuck, who I liked the way Shuck played last year. I'm a certifiable Shuckhead. I think he'd play pretty well in this offense with Kenny Gainwell. Let's get to our final player here of free agency. It is Rashad White, another kind of passing down back. I'm sending him to the Arizona Cardinals. I think him and Trey Benson would make sense. Benson, I don't know if he can really function in the passing game. He's more of just a, you know, one cut and go, like, big play type of running back. Also, let's be honest, Trey Benson's more of a theory than a reality at this point. We always see these, like, Shanahan, McVay guys. They come in, and usually in their first season, if they don't have a lot of offensive line talent, they throw out more of a zone-based system, you know? And that's exactly what I think we'll see here in Arizona. Rashad White kind of fits there, would be a pass protector, a check down guy, just a, hey, it didn't work out with Trey Benson, break glass in case of emergency. I'm really stretching to sell this one here. Rashad White, Arizona Cardinals.
About to say, man, Rashad White is like the Kate Otten of the running back position. You know, come on. What are we doing? I was shocked you even included Rashad White. I'll be honest with you. Go to Cleveland. I don't want to see you. Push on Judkins. Take every single touch out here. Rashad White. I think I've watched enough Rashad White football for one lifetime already. So I will say, though, because Sean Tucker, the Buccaneers, said today they're not tendering him, Rashad White deserves credit for holding off everyone's favorite, you know, number three running back in Sean Tucker, who, by the way, did absolutely nothing with his opportunities this year. So I guess we can
everyone's
ignore that
favorite industry plant, like the dynasty industry plant that is Sean Tucker.
Congrats on one good half against the Saints in 2024. Like, that's literally basically what we're, you know, accounting for in Sean Tucker's career. So not to completely crap on Sean Tucker, but just the one thing that could make me look dumb at Rashad White is, you know, if you just kind of stripped away my preconceived notions and the thoughts, like, the dude had an RB10 finish in 2023 and even was a low-end RB2 in 2024, even with Bucky doing his thing. So good at everything, jack of all trades, master of none. Obviously not the sexiest running back signing, but if he does go somewhere like the Cardinals, man, like, Rashad White could be the sort of running back where he's like an RB4 in ADP, but once you actually run the projections, you're like, oh no, he probably should be going higher.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense there. And yeah, this would definitely save the Cleveland Browns offense. That's for sure. That's the one thing that they would need to get out of trouble there. All right, Ian, why do we include these guys like Rashad White, Kate Otten, the whole deal? Because that gave us 20 even players that we just discussed here. We gave out 20 player to team fits there. And you know, that's a good headline that they can throw out for this YouTube video. 20 free agent fantasy fits. Dude, people are clicking that. People are clicking content anytime Ian Harditz is a part of it. Ian, what are you working on right now that people can check out?
Appreciate you, man. This was fun. Oh, yeah. The Fantasy Life Show. Find it on YouTube, podcast, wherever. Also, plenty of stuff going on over at fantasylife.com. Actually, just launched our draft guide. So we got Dwayne The Rock McFarland's rookie supermodel, Matthew Friedman, most accurate mock drafter in the industry. All of his goodness, that and much, much more. But no, man, this was a lot of fun. Appreciate you having me on. And just, I love this league. I love football so much. And the fact that we can have so much to talk about in March, man, warms my heart. So fun time. And yeah, thank you everyone for watching.
No doubt, man. Thank you for doing this. Always a good time breaking it down with Ian. And yeah, anytime we can get together in March and people are going to watch us talk about Romeo Doubs and what an exciting fantasy free agent fit he would be. You know, we picked a pretty good line of work. It is great to be us. As Ian would say, it's a great day to be great. This was a great day to be great with Ian on the show. That is going to do it for this show. But we will be back on Monday as we continue Mock Draft Monday. Ian, EJ Snyder drops in to join us. We filmed this one in Indy, okay? So it's a pre-tape, but all of his picks still hold up because EJ is very, very good at this. Then on Tuesday, we're going to be back live with Justin Boone to react to all of the, I'm not even going to call it legal tampering anymore, the start of free agency. We are going to be back to react to it. That's at 2 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, right here on this YouTube channel. Until then, we are out.